to the next installment of the Sutra of Mountains and Waters. The mountains and waters of the immediate present are themselves the actualization, the manifestation of the ancient Buddha way. Was anybody here not yesterday? Was anybody here not yesterday? Yes. I don't think this is amplification. It's
no,
just
recording.
It's recording. Maybe you could.
I will try. So, just to review a little bit from yesterday, this important point about Dharma position. So, the second sentence of Dogen's essay here is, each mountains and waters abiding in its phenomenal expression realizes completeness. So phenomenal expression is this term ho'i or dharma position, and which may be familiar to people in the Genjo koan, that the firewood abides in the phenomenal expression or the dharma position of firewood, which fully includes past and future. Means it's like dependent on the past and future, and it's also independent of past and future. So the dharma position, which Dogen uses throughout the Shobogenzo, is this important teaching for Dogen about interdependence. Everything depends on past and future. For example, mountains depend on volcanic activity, and they depend on our perception of them, and so on. But they're also independent. And the way we talked about it yesterday was their dependence, because they're dependent on all these other conditions, they're empty of independent existence. That's like form actually is emptiness. That's the logic of form is emptiness. Because things are dependent, they're empty of independence. But then how are they independent? This is kind of outside the realm of logic. This is in the realm of direct experience, that firewood abides in its dharma position of firewood, which in direct experience it doesn't include all those factors that it's dependent on. It's just firewood right now. It's the realm of the immediate present. And that immediate present, empty of all our ideas of it, can manifest as firewood. So that's the aspect of emptiness itself is form. This is a little bit interpretive, but dependence, the dependence aspect of the dharma position is like form. All dependent things are empty, and the independence is all emptiness must be expressed as form. There's no abstract emptiness apart from form. So dharma position is like form itself is emptiness, emptiness itself is form. That's a brief overview. But in a way, that sets up the whole dynamic of this fascicle. Mountains and waters abiding in their dharma position of interdependence as well as independence realize completeness. And then we have this saying that Dogen brings up from Fuyo Dokai. The green mountains are always walking. A stone woman gives birth to a child at night. And so again, we could see this as these two sentences of the Heart Sutra, that the green mountains, those particular mountains, they have a particular color, green. They're like form. They appear solid. There they are, like dominating the Tassajara Valley. mountains, but they're walking. So form is completely flexible. Actually, form is interdependently interacting with all things, and poetically we call that walking. So the Green Mountains always walking is like form itself is empty of being this fixed solid form. It can walk. A stone woman gives birth to a child at night is like emptiness. The stone woman is like, actually means like a barren woman unable to give birth. But it, of course, Dogen's playing with the stone aspect here too. But something that can't give birth, something it can't give birth because it's not a thing and it's completely free from birth and death. Emptiness, actually, can give birth to a child. Emptiness can manifest as form. So form can walk. Form is empty. And emptiness can and must manifest, must give birth, continuously give birth to children. At night, and night in Zen means in the realm of the inconceivable, in darkness where we can't distinguish separate things, that's the realm where stone women give birth to children. So then Dogen goes on to comment about the Green Mountains walking. That was yesterday's discussion. And we got up to this point about you should examine walking backward and backward walking and investigate the fact that walking forward and backward has never stopped since the very moment before form arose, since the time of the king of the empty eon. So a backward walking here is actually the same characters as the Fukan Zazengi. Learn the backward step, learn the backward walking. In that case, Dogen's saying learn the backward walking of turning the light around, shining back. Ekko Hensho, this is important Zen phrase that Dogen didn't make up, but particular meditation instruction, right, of the awareness that's directed towards mountains and waters and all that, directed outward, turning that awareness back at the source from source of mind from which the awareness of objects arises. Or another translation of echo, of turning the light, is tracing back the radiance. These are just, you know, they're images. It's not like you're actually taking your light of awareness and twisting it back somehow, but it's a meditation instruction and a really great one. I would understand this to be Shikan Taza instructions, actually, is either turning awareness, the outwardly directed awareness, directing it back to the source from where it comes, or just without directing it, changing the direction, just tracing back to the source from where it comes, also called thinking of what doesn't think. Think of the mind source that actually is free from thinking. And again, it's not exactly think about it. That's just Dogen's poetic, or actually Yao Shan's poetic way of saying. Attend to that which doesn't think. So here Dogen's playing with examine this backward step, like looking back to the source of mind, which is empty and still, nothing's happening there at the source, but also examine walking forward. So our practice, of course, includes both these sides of, particularly in Zazen, just resting back into the empty nature of mind, and then acting, coming forward and practicing, and cooking lunch and all of that. And the back and forth, or together, forward and backward steps. Also, you know, you could interpret this forward and backward steps also like in the Sandokai, which is all about light and dark, relative and ultimate, form and emptiness. Forward steps is like the realm of the light where we do things, and backward step in walking is like the dark realm where nothing seems to be happening. They work together. This translation from this morning is like they oppose one another. I don't think oppose means like they're fighting each other. It's just they're in relationship.
Dynamic,
yeah. The older translation that we still do in Santa Cruz says the light and dark are relative to one another, like forward and backward steps and walking. Examine walking backward and backward walking, and investigate the fact that walking forward and backward has never stopped since the very moment before form arose, since the time of the king of the empty eon. In other words, this is not something we suddenly have to do starting now. It's always been the case that the nature of mind is still, and that appears as all this stuff and activity. It's always been the case. And then, for those who are using this handout, excuse me, but a paragraph dropped off. So there's a paragraph missing here that's in the book. At this point, it says, Dogen says, if walking stops, Buddha ancestors do not appear. If walking ends, Buddha Dharma cannot reach the present. Walking forward does not cease. Walking backward does not cease. Walking forward does not obstruct walking backward. Walking backward does not obstruct walking forward. This is called the mountain's flow and flowing mountains. So, more on backward and forward steps. But particularly, Dogen often emphasizes the positive side, the expression, the manifestation, the Genjo side. He's very adamant about not falling into a kind of nihilistic emptiness view. So if walking stops, if practice, you know, our expressed practice in the world stops, then Buddha ancestors do not appear. You know, we might also say, well, if the backward step stops, then they also don't manifest. But particularly, he doesn't even bother to say that. He says, we have to practice. It's kind of like, we have to come forward and practice wholeheartedly, diligently, for Buddha ancestors to appear and for Buddha Dharma to reach the present. But neither walking forward nor backward ever ceases anyway. This is often the dynamic, right? It's like, you have to do it, but of course, it's already happening. So then we go on. Green mountains, master walking, and eastern mountains, master traveling on water. So we'll get to where Dogen directly quotes Yuen Men talking about the eastern mountains walking on water in a few more paragraphs. So we'll wait to that. But same thing, really. Green mountains are walking, and eastern mountains also walk on the water. Accordingly, these activities are a mountain's practice. Or literally like Sangaku, a mountain's study. This is how mountains study and practice. They walk. Keeping its own form or its own face without changing body and mind, a mountain always practices in every place. Uh, without moving a particle of dust, without changing anything at all, mountains can practice in every place simultaneously. So it's a great practice principle when you're sitting, if you feel like, well, I have to do something differently. I have to change my body and mind in order to really practice. No, not necessarily. Keeping its own form, the mountain or us, without changing body and mind, a mountain and everything always practices in every place.
Kokyo, is that saying that even if I can see how, you know, the mountain is always practicing in every place, but if you substitute like a human being who is practicing in every place, and we guess on the dark side we are, or it's impossible for us, if you will, not to, but there may not be the manifestation of that practice. If we're not attending to it, if we're not fanning ourselves in a way.
There's always these two sides. Yeah, that's always the issue. That it's always happening, and yet we have to align with it.
Use the force.
Yeah, it's Dogen's is always playing with this too, right? And it's like if we get caught on one side or another, he always brings up the other side. It's already happening, but then if we get lazy and then everything's it doesn't matter. Then he says you have to really diligently, wholeheartedly practice. And then if you get like, well, I'm not doing it. I have to do it. This is a big problem. Then he'll say it's always happening. So I think with us too, if we find ourselves getting stuck in either side, which you know might be hard to notice, especially subtly stuck in either side, then we can just remember the other side. And of course, Sangha is good for that. Reminds us of the other side, one way or the other. Like, are you being a little bit, like, uptight about this practice? Or like, I saw you weren't at Zazen today. you committed to come, right? So we have, you know, those other people help us with those two sides.
I think that brings us back to section 3, mountains do not lack the qualities of mountains, or humans do not lack the quality of humans, therefore they always abide in ease and always walk.
Mm.
I think when you said every moment is ease, meant something.
Yeah, the ease of abiding at ease means like nothing's happening, there's a realm where nothing's happening, there's no movement. And then there's the realm of, like, walking. That's like the emptiness and form always are simultaneous. Mostly we're in touch with the moving world. Sometimes we get that sense in Zazen that, like, really nothing's happening here and nothing has ever happened. But as soon as we have the thought of it, then we're moving again. Don't slander by saying that a green mountain cannot walk and an eastern mountain cannot travel on water. When your understanding is shallow, you doubt the phrase, green mountains are walking. When your learning is immature, you're shocked by the words, flowing mountains. Flowing, walking. Dependently arising, dependently ceasing. Without fully understanding even the words flowing water, you drown in small views and narrow understanding. I think drown is a nice word there too, right? Because it's like we're talking about understanding the words flowing water. So it's like, I don't understand what this flowing water means here, but meanwhile we're like drowning in the flowing water. We're totally immersed in the flowing water. At the very time that we feel as if we don't understand it. So this is kind of like back to Zazen, you know. All of this talk of Dogen at the end, we just, you know, can open the valve and just let it all drain out and go back to sit.
Yeah.
drop off all views. Yet the characteristics of mountains manifest their form and life force. And literally it says, manifest their form and name. So they can be expressed in words and names, like mountain. Mountains manifest the name mountain in relation to us. It couldn't do that without us, of course. And life force is myo-myaku, life vein, which is another name in the Zen world for kechi-myaku, the blood vein. Is like the lineage of ancestors. So the life lineage, life vein, myo-myaku, life force. So actually, mountains manifest form and name, and they manifest the like the blood lineage of the ancestors, which doesn't get brought out in this translation. But Dogen's going to pick up on that now, because he's going to start talking about Buddha ancestors. I'll try. There is walking, there is flowing, and there's a moment when a mountain gives birth to a mountain's child. So a mountain, like a stone woman, can give birth to a child. A mountain gives birth to a child. How can this unmoving, solid, lifeless block give birth to a child? And this is, you know, we could interpret this in various ways. Mountains and mountain child, cause and effect. But we could also, following on this myo-myaku, we could talk about this as Dharma transmission. That a mountain gives birth to a mountain child, or a stone woman, something empty Buddha nature, can both give rise to a person, a child, but also that that stone woman emptiness manifesting as a lively, dancing child. That whole process can give rise to another stone child. The stone, the Buddha nature, empty Buddha nature aspect of stone, giving birth to the expression of a particular ancestor. Buddha ancestors, or Buddhas and ancestors, we could even see that as like, as emptiness and form. Buddhas are like inconceivable, we can't see them, they're beyond all discrimination and conceptual ideas, but ancestors are like these particular 92 so on, particular human people. Buso, Buddhas and ancestors, has that those two sides. There's walking, there's flowing, and there's a moment when a mountain gives birth to a mountain's child. Because mountains are Buddha ancestors appear in this way. Even if you see mountains as grass, trees, earth, rocks, or walls, do not take this seriously or worry about it. So now these are these four views of mountains, which is in some particular kind of obscure sutra that I can't remember what it's called, but I think this, basically these same views are presented, but I think instead of mountains, one of the Buddha's disciples is talking about it. The Jetta Grove here looks like these, you know, grass, trees, earth, and rocks. In the sutra version, it says that. And then the rest is just the same as the sutra, but Dogen changes Jetta Grove into mountains. These four different false or incomplete views of mountains. And later we're going to see an even more classic example of the four views of water. But here, the four views of mountains are, this is the first one, seeing mountains as grass, trees, earth, rocks, or walls, which is a very common view. But we could also see that as the parts. You look at a mountain and you see all the different parts of the mountain. Like on the mountain, what is the mountain? Well, you look at it and it looks like rocks and fences and grass and so on. And we say, well, that's the mountain. That combination of the parts is the mountain. But that's okay, but it's not really complete. It's don't take that too seriously or worry about it. The parts of the mountain being the mountain, that's not complete realization. Or actually, that's genjo here, not really realization, but it's not complete actualization. Even if there is a moment when you view mountains as the seven treasures shining, this is not the true source. Or, again, true source here is kie, we'll use for refuge. Kie literally means return to and rely on. Namu kie butsu is like homage to, return to, and rely on Buddha. So, it's this is not the true refuge, we could say, the true returning and relying on. Seven treasures shining is like the classic Indian list of seven kinds of jewels, gold and silver and lapis lazuli and all those things. So to see mountains in this kind of magnificent way, maybe altered way, where it's like totally beautiful beyond the usual rough rock we see it as. You could say that's the second view. It's like no longer just an ordinary mountain, it's like shining. Maybe this is like, you know, when you on the fifth day of Sesshin or so, when you come out of the Zendo and you look at the mountain and it's shining, right? It's like a lapis lazuli mountain. It's but that's not the complete actualization. That's not the whole thing here. The beautiful mountain. That's the second incomplete view of mountains. Even if you understand mountains as the realm where all Buddhas practice, this understanding is not something to be attached to. Like, all of these are okay. Mountains are the realm where Buddhas practice, but that's not the whole story either. Even if you have the highest understanding of mountains as all Buddha's inconceivable qualities, the truth is not only this. So even to see that mountains are just like the adornment of Buddha's awakening, like this is all Buddha's pure land, all these mountains are just manifestations of Buddha. Pretty good, but not something to be attached to. Those are the four views, limited views of mountains. And the problem is that these are conditioned views. They're karmically conditioned. They're just limited views of sentient beings.
Is it possible to have an unconditioned view of the mountain? Is Dogen expressing, or maybe it's impossible to know, but certainly seems like when he goes on about later on in the sutra that, so I've read some stuff where people say the unconditioned, like it's viewless, like there's no views. So is there?
Well, probably any.
I never answered that question, but I think it's interesting. Is there an unconditioned view of the mountain?
You know, as soon as we put it into words, it becomes conditioned. But if we have to say it in words, or if Dogen has to say it in words, he would say the mountains abiding in their dharma position. that fully includes all conditions and is independent of all conditions, is the manifestation of the ancient Buddha way in the complete immediate present. So, you know, to say that makes it a conditioned view, but seems like that's the best that Dogen can do. I mean, he's going to keep trying for a few more pages, right? But he often likes to say what it's not. But he's also not afraid to say what it is. It's just, we don't want to get stuck in anything he's saying.
There must be a way, though, where there's less association about a mountain or about a person or about yourself, like where there's less conditioned views.
You know, the interesting thing about this Dharma position, as we've been talking about it, right, is that it's independent of all those views, right? It's just the complete expression right now, just the radiance of the moment, free from all ideas, but mountain. And yet, the Dharma position also, it includes this dependence on other conditions. And as I was talking about yesterday, particularly, it depends on us, our perception of it. It's a part of the way the mountains are. And Dogen doesn't need to deny that. It's not like, well, we see the mountain in the morning, and then it looks different in the evening. I mean, doesn't it actually appear different? Or somebody today said to me, I just noticed that when I'm in the plunge in the bathhouse, and I look at Flag Rock, it looks a lot smaller than when you're in the courtyard. You can check that out for yourself. And like, it might, and we were discussing why that might be, according to like, there's more flat land in between or something. But in that way, the mountain is actually, it's a different mountain when you're in those two different places. So the mountain depends on us. And that way it kind of walks. When we walk from the courtyard to the bathhouse, the mountain also walks. Mm-hmm. It's a different mountain. But in any given moment, it's completely independent of all of that.
Well, could you take that to just like being a human? Like, I think it's, I guess.
Yeah.
When I was reading The Time Being, you know, he says in there, the way the self arrays itself is the form of the entire world. So it's like, so the more we study ourselves, we just can, my understanding is we can overlay how we operate as human beings onto the rest of the world. So I'm assuming that the same thing is of the mountain, you know, we can take that. And so I guess I've just been intrigued lately intrigued by what you're saying with perceptions, like these ideas, we're independent of ideas. So is it true then if we could perceive in a sequential, like with one sequence, like of a moment, right, where it stops, like karma would begin and end in that one moment then, right, technically speaking? Yeah. Not that I really have any idea what I'm talking about, but it seems like it would just,
well, it's true. In the immediate present,
right,
of the moment that's independent of past and future, yeah, there's no karma.
Okay, right.
Yeah. We're completely free.
But then the other side shows up, which is the memory of ourselves, this continuity,
yeah,
right, through memory,
mm-hmm,
of perception of ourselves.
Yeah, so Dogen completely includes this human side of all our conditioned stuff. That's what's so beautiful, I think, about this term ho'i, this Dharma position. It fully includes all, you know, past and future, but also everything. It includes all our karmic conditioning and all our stuff. And at the same time, not like, you know, alternating with, but at the same time, it's completely independent of all of that.
So that kind of reminds me of something that Suzuki Roshi said about let karma work on the voidness of space. It resonates with me because I see, I guess, in my life how I just keep carrying on these patterns. And then if I'm willing to, or able to, or I can sit enough zazen that just transforms itself, that those patterns, the less I hold on to them, the more they attenuate, and then the less head of consciousness gets carried on to the next moment. I don't know. He said that's why I'm sort of just fascinated by how
Let karma work in the voidness of space.
Yeah, on the voidness of space.
On the voidness of space, and let the voidness of space work on karma. Mm-hmm.
It's just for me, it's helpful to take it from the mountain and bring it down to how it can be affect me in a practical sense.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem very practical to me.
Mm.
You know, it's like beautiful. I mean, he's a phenomenal poet. And
yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, another thing about Dogen is that, yeah, you can just look at it as his brilliant exposition of Madhyamaka philosophy, but it's also totally practical. How those things, you know, how to make that practical is the question. I think the more we hear it and the more we just take it in, the more we remember these two different sides, then we can, the less we need to get caught in either side. And that's practical. I mean, it could play out like in a conversation with someone where you're like, it's starting to turn into an argument and it's like building up and it's getting kind of heated and you're totally into the interdependent side. You're being totally affected by this other person. And then you suddenly remember the independent side of like, oh, there's just this moment right now, it's just like fiery energy filling the universe right now, beyond all the ideas of it. And like, and then maybe you remember that for a second and you're like, what are we talking about again? what's this argument about? Oh, did you see the mountain? Mm-hmm. Look over there, the mountain. And they might be like, what? I thought we were arguing. And then, no, but just wait a second, look at the mountain. And then then you both sit down and do zazen in front of the mountain for a while.
That's if you're talking, if you're arguing with a Buddhist.
But then, after you sat zazen for a while, then you might be like, but actually, this is an important point.
Right.
We need to work this out. So then you go back to the argument.
Was that no longer an argument?
Yeah, it might not be an argument, or if it starts to get to be an argument, then you like look at the mountain again. I mean, something like that. I think it can play out in these various ways of just like remembering the other side. Usually, our problem is remembering the mountain side, the stone woman side. We usually don't have so much problem with the manifestation is happening. Not too many people get caught in like emptiness, sickness around here. Tassajara is—it's too busy. Maybe in the winter. Yeah. Of course, we have that line too in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi that was the same principle, right? When the wooden man is like the realm where nothing happens, a wooden man can't move, but. But when the wooden man starts to sing, the stone woman gets up dancing. It's, this is not within the reach of feeling or discrimination. And yet we could talk about those two different aspects of woodenness and stoneness where nothing's happening, giving rise to song and dance, expression coming forth from emptiness. Which is a little different. It could be a little bit different than just looking at an expression like me talking away like this right now. This is empty. That's a kind of like mundane expression is actually empty. But then this other dimension of the immediate present is that from that emptiness of any fixed characteristics, a song can suddenly emerge, like spontaneously, or as an expression of emptiness. Yes?
I happen to have a wonderful quote here about form, emptiness, and singing and dancing. It's Hakuin.
Oh.
When you understand that form is the form of the formless, your coming and going takes place nowhere else but where you are. When you understand that thought is the thought of the thoughtless, your singing and dancing is no other than voice of the Dharma.
Ah, Yes. Mm-hmm. Is that the song of Zazen?
In praise of Zazen.
In praise of Zazen.
Is that
what
it
is? Yeah. So, a little aside is that I'm quite drawn to these days the Vajrayana great perfection tradition, Dzogchen. So this summer I was at several Dzogchen retreats, and a really beautiful way of talking about this kind of thing is that they talk about this naked awareness, empty, clear awareness that's, it's empty, but it's also totally clear and not nothingness, right? Because it's awareness. And there's that essence awareness, and then there's the expression awareness. And the expression awareness is, if we're talking about the expression coming from this non-dual awareness, that, as I understand it, from these teachers, is like, it's like, the naked awareness is like Dharmakaya, actually, and then this expression awareness is like Nirmanakaya, Buddha activity. So it's a little different than saying emptiness itself is form. It's a little different. You know, we say form is emptiness, like, you know, this piece of paper is emptiness, and then emptiness, the emptiness of the paper is manifest as the paper. That's all in the realm of like dualistic expression. But then there's this kind of non-dual expression arising from non-dual awareness that's not just like form. It's not just it's no longer dependent. It's no longer a dependently arising activity in a way, although it might appear to sentient beings like that. It's more like it's Buddha activity. That might be kind of hard to follow, but I think you can find similar principles in Zen, but they're not maybe brought out so explicitly.
The way we normally think, it's like looking through a bamboo tube at the Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but maybe another point about this is you might think, ooh, that seems so far-reaching. What, how could we ever, like, manifest Nirmanakaya Buddha activity? Even though the Dharmakaya is right here, I mean, the Buddha nature that we all have right now is actually the nature of Dharmakaya. It's just blocked by all our dualistic obscurations. But you could say, how can we come from that place? How can our activity come from that place? But then to kind of clarify with one of these teachers, they say, well, is it like the, even though that seems so awesome and far-reaching, is it like our dualistic activity and thinking and so on, is it more like the actual nature of that stuff is what we mean by the awareness expression? The naked awareness expression. And he said, yeah, it's actually that. So it's not, so it's actually the nature of our thinking, of our ordinary dualistic thinking and I'm going to pick up the cup now, and like, here it is. Is this manifestation of naked awareness? No, this is just ordinary dualistic activity. There's me here and a cup over here and so on. But the nature of that whole expression, the true nature of that, is like completely beyond all our ideas. It's like, it's not what we think it is. It's not that I really just picked up a cup. And the way that the cup gets picked up, or, you know, this expression of picking up a cup, the true nature of that expression is what we mean by this non-dual awareness expression. You follow that? It's getting a little bit obscure.
Well, how could it not be, though?
Yeah, how could it not be? Of course. It always is. But just, I think the beauty of this way of looking at it is that, like, the nirmanakaya activity, like, you know, in the sutras, like, a sentient being realizes the dharmakaya.
I'm
like,
a little confused why you're talking about nirmanakaya and dharmakaya right now.
Why?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wonder how you got into
that. Yeah, well, we could tie it in.
I mean, is it empty? Is it? It has to do with the awareness. Is that? It seems to me I sort of maybe lost a piece.
It's a little bit of like going off on a a little side road, but we could say that in this case, the child is nirmanakaya.
The child
that the stone woman gives birth to.
Okay.
Stone woman's like, or a mountain. Actually, it's right. A mountain gives birth to a child at night. We could say a mountain is like dharmakaya, complete. Naked awareness, free of all obscurations, Buddha nature totally revealed, and come to full fruition. And then the classical, Indian way of talking about this is from that realization of dharmakaya, then there's the manifestation of like Shakyamuni Buddha as Nirmanakaya Buddha, like there's a form body, a manifestation body, which is no longer a sentient being, right? It's a manifestation. It's one of the bodies of Buddha. It's not the Dharma body has no form, as we chanted this morning, right? The pure Dharma body neither appears nor disappears. But the power of Buddha's great vows reveals coming and going. So through vow, the Dharmakaya can reveal this Nirmanakaya, this manifestation body, which is no longer just like, technically speaking, as I understand it, it's not just like another dependent co-arising. It's like, it's inconceivable to us what that is, but it's like an expression of emptiness. So that's one way to look at this child of the mountain is like a Nirmanakaya Buddha. But you could also just look at it as emptiness itself is form. Or emptiness is expressed as dependently arisen things, even in this just ordinary world.
And the Sambhogakaya is then just the
Sambhogakaya. The bliss body, literally. So you could say it's like the meeting of those two in the way that a transformation body comes forth is creates this bliss body. I guess traditionally the Sambhogakayas are like actual Buddhas with names like Amitabha. Buddhas like a, normal sentient beings can't see the Sambhogakayas, but they actually are, they're kind of manifestations of the Dharmakaya also. But they create these pure lands, so at a certain point bodhisattvas can see them. Advanced bodhisattvas can see Sambhogakaya Buddhas and practice in these pure lands, which may be not like so far away. They're maybe not like a different location in terms of miles, but they're like,
get complicated.
yeah. But Sambhogakayas are the ones that create pure lands, like the Western paradise, right? That's not really west of here, but we just call it that. But we don't like see this as Buddha's Western paradise. We don't see the jewels hanging from the trees and stuff. Maybe we do sometimes.
But if we do, it doesn't matter because we're still not there.
If we. Oh yeah, that's like this fourth view, right? Yeah. If you see the mountains as the seven jewels, that's still not complete. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, enough of that. this is not the understanding of Buddha ancestors, but just looking through a bamboo tube at the corner of the sky. Great image, right?
Yes.
It's especially a nice image because when you look through the bamboo tube at the corner of the sky, you really are seeing the sky, right? You actually accurately see that little slice that you see really is the pure cloudless sky, but you're just seeing this small part of it. It's different than like looking through a bamboo tube with dark sunglasses. You really do see the sky, but it's just a corner.
It's nice to have 1,000 arms and each one, each hand having an eye too.
For each corner.
For each corner.
Turning an object and turning the mind is rejected by the great sage, the Buddha. So these are some phrases that are kind of interesting because sometimes Dogen uses them positively, like turning an object and turning the mind is this kind of flexible thing. But here he's kind of saying this is rejected by the Buddha. So maybe we could see it as trying to change our circumstances in order to trying to reject these four views of mountains in order to see the real mountains. Turning the object of mountains and turning our mind, fixing it up somehow to instead of just without moving a particle, you extend the Buddha's great activity. Explaining the mind and explaining true nature is not agreeable to Buddha ancestors, which is another phrase Dogen uses positively. He's got a fascicle called Seshin Sesho, which means expounding mind, expounding nature, which is this same phrase, which he talks about. He turns explaining mind and explaining nature as the realm of Buddhas and ancestors. But here he's saying it's not agreeable to Buddha ancestors. So we can see it as, well, the realm of explaining is not agreeable. Or we could see it as explaining the mind as one thing over here and explaining nature as one thing over here that the mind is aware of is not agreeable because that separates them. Seeing into the mind and seeing into true nature is the activity of people outside the way. All these great sounding things that he critiques, like Dogen tends to do. Seeing into true nature in this text is a kensho, a popular Zen phrase that Dogen is very critical of. It's kensho literally means seeing nature, nature meaning like Buddha nature, true nature. But and very important in Rinzai Zen, it's like the goal of the practice is to. It's funny, in early American Zen, they often would leave that phrase untranslated for some reason. So people would talk about like getting kensho, having kensho, but it's like literally seeing nature. So like, I want to get seeing nature already. It sounds funny, right? I don't know why they didn't translate it. I think it would help to say, like, the goal is just seeing nature. But it's like, makes it into this mystical thing that you're supposed to get. How do you get seeing, right? But even despite, before it came to America, Dogen critiques this in, most explicitly in, Shobo Genzo Shizen Bhikkhu, the monk in the fourth jhana, is the name of a Dogen fascicle. And I think that's when he gets really critical. He actually, I think, it hurts me a little bit that he criticizes the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Ancestor, which I think is one of the greatest Zen teachings. But he criticizes it, I think, because that word, maybe it's even the first time that word appears and is popularized by Huainong, he's one of our ancestors, right? But he uses Kensho. Yeah. I think a lot in there. He says, you just have to see nature and then no problem.
What's Dogen's critique of it?
The gist of his critique is that
Platform Sutra is not legitimate.
Well, that's, yeah, I think he says it's not legitimate in order to critique this term, actually, you know. Yeah. And historically it may not be, you know. But I think his main critique is that it's a, it's kind of dualistic, subtly dualistic to say that, like, you know, what is it, like, there's me, I'm gonna see my nature. And this, like, act of seeing something, even though that's maybe not really in there in the way that it's understood by the sixth ancestor, that phrase, seeing nature, implies, like, some activity, that the most important part is that you have to see something. And as opposed to Dogen's most important version of the goal or the path, the complete expression of practice is this shu sho instead of ken sho. It's a different show. Instead of seeing nature, shu sho is practice and verification are not two. Practice and realization is Dogen's way of talking about enlightenment. That at the very moment, the immediate present moment of practice, and we'd have to clarify what practice is, that is verifying awakening. As opposed to the Rinzai view might be seen more as like you practice really hard in this, like, in order to attain this kensho at a particular time in the future, as opposed to like you sit down to practice and immediately one moment of practice is complete verification of Buddhahood or awakening.
Except it seems like Dogen is speaking from some seriously deep kensho.
Well, also we have to understand what practice means. So some people would take that as like practice means like you sit zazen in the particular posture, and as soon as your postures, like you're back and forth, as soon as you hit upright, you suddenly verify awakening, because that's practice the way Dogen describes it in the Fukan Zazengi. I don't think that's what he means by practice, you know. Although he does, that is, you know, he gives these practice instructions. But you could almost say practice is, well, dropping off body and mind, say. At the moment of complete dropping off, that verifies Buddha's awakening. And that is Dogen's definition of Shikan Taza. What is just wholeheartedly sitting? It's dropping off body and mind.
And so what is the difference between dropping off body and mind and kensho?
Yeah.
maybe we could say that when Dogen's defining his zazen like this in the Jijiyu Zamai, right, he says, he talks about, you know, all of your body and mind are dropping off all the time. And he's saying, all this, however, does not appear within perception. So it's like, whereas seeing sounds like something's appearing within perception. So the dropping off is not like, now I see it. It's more subtle than that. It's dangerous. I mean, this is the whole thing about Soto Zen, particularly compared to Rinzai Zen. It gets criticized for being like, because it's so subtle, it's like, well, everything, we're dropping off all the time, and we don't want to look for some particular thing, and we know that all of this is it. So it can easily become...
So we're right back to just taking the posture. And then
Or it can become lazy, right? Mm-hmm. Where Rinzai Zen, it's hard to become lazy. You have to practice harder and harder till you hit kensho. But that has its problems, right? Of like big time gaining idea, and it's not here right now, it's there later. But the subtlety, this is why it's so beautiful to study Dogen, because it's in here, and it just like... through hearing it more and more, we our trust in this truth deepens and deepens, our trust that actually everything is dropping off all the time. It's not something we have to do. And it's not like it's going to be some dramatic, necessarily, that it will dramatically appear within perception. That's not so much the point. If we want it to appear within perception, we're probably not dropping off. We're holding a little bit of like, I just want to see it. Just give me a little glimpse. But just like, no, just drop off everything. And we're just resting at peace. And then maybe a thought comes up. Oh, is this dropping off body and mind? And then it just appeared within perception. So now the body and mind just got picked back up again. So it's just so subtle and so beautiful and so elusive and so easy to overlook. Yes.
I have an image that comes up every once in a while, and especially when I lose faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful image because there are so many rocks. I mean, we have the rocks around here that are formed by the water rushing over them, or just dripping on them for so long, and they become soft and beautiful. And I feel like my zazen. I trust that my zazen works that way. It's not for me. It's like the rocks.
Nice image. Yeah.
It is. It's an image that supports me.
Because also that's like, in terms of this essay, right? It's like that emptiness is wearing away the solidity of our views.
Yeah.
I just want to get sort of back to what you said about posture. And like, oh, sitting posture, because it does seem like sometimes I hear that, like you can just sort of sit in this upright posture, and that's all you need to do, and the mind can be wandering wherever it's going, seems like when some people say that, and it seems like a misapprehension of what sitting zazen is, or what zazen is, at least that's from my experience, my understanding.
Yeah, well, again, it's a kind of, there's some subtlety there. Dogen, I think this thing about the posture comes from Dogen's fascicle, Zamai O Zamai, the king of samadhis, samadhi, where he talks about, I don't know exactly how he says it, I can't remember, but it's like, just to sit in this posture, I think he quotes some sutra where he says, when bodhisattvas sit in this posture, all demons flee away and they can't stand it. And then something like, this posture is actually is body and mind dropping off and complete manifestation. And we could say that the truth of that is that, again, it's like this posture is it and everything is it, right? It's like emptiness is form. And we're talking about zazen. Dogen's talking about zazen. Here's a form we're talking about, but it's an expression of Buddha nature. So, and kind of in parentheses, everything's an expression of Buddha nature, but we're talking about this form right now.
Well, but is that form actually practice realization, or does practice realization also include bringing the mind back to the physicality of the present moment?
That would be a more practical way to look at it.
There
are some practical things about the posture is a good one, I think, There's value in the posture. And I think maybe he's playing with that a little bit, too, that, like, there's this the kind of mundane way of looking at, like, this particular posture as a yogic posture is good for energy flow and for dropping off body and mind. The posture is designed for that. But I think more he does this thing, right, of like part of Dogen's thing is he gets into all these details of forms, and then he'll say how that is expressing like the entire universe. So when he's talking about the zazen form, he's going to say that. So I think that teaching is like to not look for it elsewhere, to not look for it to not look for emptiness outside this particular form. Mm-hmm. And if we're sitting zazen, this is the particular form. through which to open to emptiness, instead of saying like emptiness is like the way that like the sky is or something. It's like, well, if we're sitting zazen, well, we can open to emptiness through this particular body and mind and posture.
He says seeing into mind and seeing into true nature is the activity of people outside the way. The word activity makes me think it's not like a response.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
doing.
Constructed doing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that word is very important in this translation.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the gate of non-action wu wei in zazen.
Yeah.
Wei wu wei.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point, that that activity could be the pivotal word here. The activity of seeing nature. The intentional karmic activity.
So it's like that may be the gaining idea, the activity?
Yeah, or even just thinking that we're doing it. Ah, I finally got Kensho. Yeah, I got it. I got it.
Black Heart doing zazen.
Yeah.
Suzuki Roshi saying, "Don't ever think that you're doing."
Yes. Yeah.
Zazen does you.
Yep. Zazen does you. You know, just as a final note about this Kensho thing, Dogen uses maybe his most favorite and most famous way of talking about enlightenment is this Shusho practice, and literally verification or confirmation are not two. Is really the heart of the non-duality of Dogen's practice and realization. But he does use Kensho. He definitely, I think he uses Kensho some, and he uses his term Satori. That's in Rinzai Zen, often equated with Kensho. So he has a whole fascicle called Great Satori. Or Go is the other way of saying Satori. Daigo. Same character. Where he talks about great enlightenment and in this, you know, characteristically Dogen way, but he's not afraid to use those words either sometimes. Set words and phrases are not the words of liberation.
Where are you in the page one?
Outside the way, on page one, yeah.
Okay.
Set words or sticking to words and phrases are not the words of liberation. There is something free from all these understandings. And here it is, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what does he say? Well, there is something free from all these understandings. Green mountains are always walking, and eastern mountains travel on the water. You should study this in detail. That's Sankyu is also a really popular Dogen phrase. It means like deeply study and thoroughly investigate. Sankyu.
So
all through Shobogenzo.
Doesn't really necessarily mean detail. In detail. I found that a strange phrase there.
In detail, maybe we could say like thoroughly.
Yeah.
Thoroughly. Okay. Yeah. Detail kind of implies like nitpicky little.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's more like thoroughly investigate.
So later he says you should study and investigate this thoroughly. That's probably just to the English. It's probably the same phrase, but just different in English, just to mix it up a little, or something.
Later in the essay,
yeah.
Sometimes there's investigate this thoroughly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be the same. I could check some related phrases he uses too. Oh, also this: there is something free from all these understandings. Literally, that where it says understandings is more literally objective realms, which I think makes it more clear.
Say that again.
Kyokai is means object, object realms or objective realms, which is quite different from understandings, you know. And that's, I think, the point is that these are all objective experiences separate from objective means and like they're like objects outside of, separate from our awareness. Non-duality in practice generally means subject and object are not separate. So if you have a, if you have a kensho over here or in here, but if you have it, that's objective. It's an objective realm. But if you are it, that's different, right? There's no separation. A stone woman gives birth to a child at night. Now, so this, he's finally gotten to the second half of this phrase. He's going to comment on. Means that the moment when a barren woman gives birth to a child is called night. It's nice. In typical way of Dogen talking, that instead of saying that this activity happens to happen at night, that the stone woman gives birth to a child in the darkness, meaning like in the realm of non-discrimination, in the realm of the ultimate, it's that at the moment, as a particular moment in time, the immediate present, right, when a barren woman gives birth to a child, that moment is called night.
So that's this whole like time being trip.
Yeah, it's time being is woven in here. Again, this was written the same year as time being, so I think he's, you know, this is the way his mind is working this year. There are male stones, female stones, and non-male, non-female stones, which commentators say in Taoist magical terms, they actually talked about these different gender stones and stuff. But the point being, I would say, is that you know, male and female just means like particular. It's not just like generic stones. It's like there's a male stone, a female stone. We don't deny the differences and particularities, but also non-female, non-male stones. It's like, again, it's always these two sides, particular and universal stones. They are placed in the sky and in the earth, or another translation is they repair the sky and repair the earth, and they're called heavenly stones and earthly stones. These are explained in the ordinary world, but not many people actually know about it. You should understand the meaning of giving birth to a child. At the moment of giving birth to a child, is the mother separate from the child? You should study not only that you become a mother when your child is born, but also that you become a child. This is the actualization of giving birth in practice realization, shusho. You should study and investigate this thoroughly. So one way to understand this is that it's like mutual interdependence, that dependent co-arising we sometimes think of as cause and effect, like a parent is the cause and the child is the effect, and it's this linear thing. But actually, in the realm of like Nagarjuna's philosophy, it's always mutual. So it's like, and that's why the phrase dependent co-arising is so nice. The co means that the child and the mother arise simultaneously, or we should just say they arise interdependently. That actually, of course, the child depends on the mother, but the mother depends on the child because they're not a mother until they have a child, right? It's not like, well, first I'll be a mother and then I can have a child. It's like at the moment of the child, this person becomes the mother, right? So the mother actually depends on the child, mutually dependently arisen. It's not linear, right? So it's a little funny to say that if you as the mother, you become a child, but if we see it as cause and effect, if the child is the effect, in that way, you become a child, the mother becomes an effect of the cause, it's called the child. That's one commentator's interpretation. You should study not only that you become a mother when your child's born, you become a child. Hey, page two. We still have a few minutes. Let's go. Great Master Guangzhen of Yunnan said, Eastern mountains travel on water. And in his record, we see that this was in response to a question. A monk asked, what is the place where Buddha is free from Buddhahood? And Yunnan answered, the Eastern mountains walk or travel on the water. What's the place where, what's the place from which all Buddhas come? Or maybe more literally, what's the place where Buddha is free from Buddhahood? Yeah. Eastern mountains travel on water. And someone discovered that there was a, that this may be based on Layman Fu, a saying, he lived around the time of Bodhidharma, great lay practitioner in China, who had this saying, where eastern mountains float on the river and western mountains wander on and on, in the realm of this world beneath the Big Dipper, this is the place of genuine liberation. Which has a very similar feeling, right? Especially eastern, where eastern mountains float on the river, and where western mountains wander on and on, in the realm of this world, beneath the Big Dipper, this is the place of genuine liberation. So Yunnan may have heard that saying. Eastern mountains travel on the water. And I don't know if there's anything particular about eastern, except that it's particular. I think that's the thing about it. It's not just like mountains in general as a conceptual idea walk on the water. It's like, no, there's particular mountains in the east and the particular mountains in the west and the south and the north. But maybe in his temple there were mountains in the east. That's like those mountains, right? The reason these words were brought forth is that all mountains are eastern mountains. And all eastern mountains travel on water. So we could hear that as like, again, eastern meaning just specific. So all mountains are specific mountains. But we could also hear it as eastern is like a totally relative term. It's like... So right now those mountains are to our east, but we say, well, what about Flag Rock? Well, you just go downstream and it'll be eastern mountains, right? Mm-hmm. So in that way, if you walk about, you can basically all mountains will be east of you if you move around enough. Maybe even if you don't, right? It's like, because if you're talking about all the way around the world, in the eastern direction, you'll eventually like hit all mountains. You know, it's just east and west are wonderfully relative terms. They all have to do with us, and that's the way. And therefore, mountains all have to do with us. Mountains depend on us. They depend on where we stand to view them to be what they are. Right? We have to stand in the west.
See, mother and child, like that one. You should investigate this thoroughly. I thought it was really helpful to think about it literally, like, and maybe someone here has had a child, but
oh yeah,
you know, like
mm-hmm.
where do you draw the line
mm-hmm.
of separateness?
Yeah,
you are this mm-hmm. organism. Like,
yeah,
do you draw it when you cut the umbilical?
Yeah, right.
Because you're still
and you're still connected.
The person grows up, and now my mom's in St. Louis, here, but we're still
totally connected. Yeah, and in the realm of mind, as soon as you think of her, she
calls you.
He calls you.
That's happened to me. I have to talk to my father a lot, you know, so you just never know.
And she depends on you, you know, when you think of her. When she doesn't, you might even ask, if you're not thinking of her, does she even exist? Oh, of course she does. How dare you say my mom doesn't exist? But does she?
Don't you say stuff about her mom.
Your mother. Yeah, she depends on... We don't necessarily have to see her for her to exist, but without her thinking of her, does she exist for us? You know, she exists in our storehouse consciousness. But if we're not accessing her...
She's sitting there.
Yeah, she exists in my form. Right? This is her genes.
Genetically speaking?
Her egg.
Mm-hmm.
That it's grown up.
Mm.
Your fine grown-up egg, Emily.
And I think that, you know, that goes for everything, right?
Yeah.
So that's
I think also we can investigate, like, well, are things, and this is would be exploring dependent co-arising, are you your mom, or are you dependent on your mom? It's like, are they one or two?
Or both.
Or neither.
So what is the function in this respect? What is the function of this reference here to skin, flesh, bones, and marrow? The next sentence.
Because of this, nine mountains, Mount Sumeru and other mountains appear and have practiced realization, or... I bet that it doesn't actually say have, yeah, because this is kind of what we've been talking about, right? More like Mount Sumeru and other mountains practice and realize. These are called Eastern Mountains. Nine mountains is an Abhidharma thing about Mount Sumeru is the center of the universe, and there's nine rings of different mountains in Buddhist cosmology. Dogen likes to refer back to those things. These are called Eastern Mountains, or another translation would be, this is called Eastern Mountains, meaning like this walking, you could even say. But could Yunmen penetrate the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of the Eastern Mountains and their vital practice realization? So some people might say, whoa, is Dogen criticizing Yunmen, the great, great Zen ancestor? This translation is kind of doesn't sound so critical, right? It's more like just asking, rhetorically asking, you know. But could he fully penetrate? Could anyone, right? You might even say, could the Buddha even penetrate the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of the Eastern Mountains? It means like all the way down to the bottom, every possible layer of the Eastern Mountains and their vital practice realization. Like who could ever penetrate them? In any one particular phrase.
Who would dare say so?
So now I see it's time to stop, and just in time before Dogen starts his rant about the careless, stupid people.